Gina Z from Santa Barbara.
Gina!
I'm Gina, I'm an addict.
Gina.
Grateful, recovering addict. I love Narcotics Anonymous. I want to thank the committee for calling on me and asking me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope. On fire for our recovery was like the best topic for me, you know. My heart is on fire for Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I can't help but recall like when this guy comes up and he's got 3 days clean and we're all cheering him on, and it's like, it's such a big deal for you to get up here, such a big deal that you're here. So if you're new and what, it doesn't matter how much time you have, if you're here and you want to get a feeling for your recovery and get that fire started, some of us need to come to these conventions and get that fire started, you know, and our light goes dim sometimes and we come here to like fill up so we can go back out there and pour out what was so freely given to us. And I'm so grateful for that. I want to thank my daughter for supporting me today. She has 33 days today. I'm giving her a shout out because that's a big deal. Big deal. Yeah. You know, when I was sitting there, I was thinking about who I was before I got here. You know, and who I was when I got here was nothing nice. You know, I work in treatment, I work in detox residential, and every day I get to see me, you know, what it was like, you know, and it was terrible, you know, and the attitude and the, you know, rolling of eyes and talking shit, like being mad, you know, like I was mad, you know, I was, you know, I can't help it. And I'm grateful that, you know what, I remember what it was like for me before I got here, like so vividly. You know, why is that? I can remember the pain so well. And when you guys share and I can identify with your stories, it's like, bam, you know, like I don't forget. You know, and they say, you know, don't forget where you came from. You know, if you hang around long enough, we're not gonna let you, you know? And you guys keep coming back and keep reminding me how well this program works. You know, to see people come up and share the recovery. And you know, I went to a speaker jam recently in Santa Barbara, and that we had these speakers, and they were fire, all of them were. And I was just like, oh my gosh, like I was so glad that I ended up there. You know, and it was a blessing for me. Like I was exploding, you know, with all the identification of their past and their present and their right nows, you know, like I could identify with so much, you know. And we always hear like, you know, whatever we're sharing, like, oh, you're not alone. Oh, you're not the only one. You know, you're not unique, you know. A lot, it's interesting how we all come from different walks of life. Well, some of us come from different walks of life and different circumstances in our lives. But you know what? The pain is the same. And the lack of knowing what love is the same. You know, looking for love in all the wrong places is the same, you know? And I'm so grateful that my higher power saw fit to bring me to Narcotics Anonymous, because it was Narcotics Anonymous that told me that I would come to believe in a power greater than myself. And I'm so grateful for that, because without that power, I wouldn't be standing here today. You know, that power is the foundation of my being, really. You know, and you know, my first recovery, I kind of, you know, it was kind of like 1, 2, cha cha cha. You know, God, I got God. You know, and it sounded good, and I did everything that they told me to do. You know, I went to a treatment center, and I came from jail, and it was like, you know, a little nudge from the judge, you know, and okay, you know, okay, I'll do this so I don't have to go to prison. And so I did it, and I was kind of like, wow, what's going on here? You know, and they started getting ready for the meeting, but I didn't know what we were doing. Everybody was getting all dolled up, you know, getting their makeup on, and they have the jams going. We get in the van, and we're going. I'm like, what are we doing? We're going to a meeting. Oh, okay, you know. So, you know, I'm jamming out. I'm having a good time in the van on the way to the meeting, and I have no idea what's up, you know. And we get to the meeting, and I see the bikes all lined up. All these bikes were lined up, all the dudes standing there, and I'm like, oh, okay, now I understand, you know. This is going to be fun, you know. And I don't know about you, but for me, you know, when the drugs were gone, you know, I was looking for love in all the wrong places, you know. I was very promiscuous and sexual, and I remember everything that came out of my mouth was sexual, you know, and it was like anything you said, I could refer it to something, you know, and I was just like that. It was just like that, you know, and just like who I was, you know, with that, you know, resting bitch face and the attitude, and, you know, because when I was growing up, I was a little girl, I still am, but I was a little girl, and I remember being out there and trying to survive, you know what I mean? So, and because I was little, I had to be mean, you know, I had to act mean, you know, and it's the little ones that are loud, you know, and that was, you know, when I found out through working steps and the process, why I was the way I was, you know, and I love the book, It Works How and Why, you know, because it explains how this works and what we're doing, why we're doing it, and what we can come to expect from it, only through the addicts who come before us and have done the work and have the experience to share with us, you know, and I'm so grateful for all the experiences that I get to listen to, because it helps me understand where I'm going. It's kind of like, you know, when you're bowling and they had the little bumpers on the side because you don't know how to bowl, so your ball doesn't go, you know. It's kind of like that. I mean, that's the way I see it. And but, you know, we go to the meeting, and I remember being introduced to like three different fellowships. You know, and I did the things that they suggested for me to do. I got phone numbers. I got a lot of phone numbers, but I didn't call anybody, you know. I went to a lot of meetings, three different fellowships, got three different sponsors. I was about it, right? And I was doing here a little step work for you, a little step work for you, a little for you. And I remember meeting with this lady, and she was like, do you know you're really hard to get to know? Like, I just sat there, and like, I got offended. Like, what are you talking about? I'm like, ask me questions. Like, interview me. You know what I mean? Like, because I didn't know how to talk. I didn't know how to have a conversation. If we weren't talking about finding ways and means to get more, or hooking up later, or right now, I didn't have no conversation. I didn't know how to be. You know what I mean? I know you do. And I'm so grateful that I stuck around long enough. And you know what? I did end up relapsing after that first introduction to recovery. I'm grateful that I got a little bit of 12-step Sabi for the next time, you know. I ended up going back to jail and, you know, back to another treatment facility. And this time I went to a year program. And it was like, oh man, I was in the jailhouse going, man, a year, damn, that's a long time. I turned 30 in the jailhouse at that time. I turned 30, I was 30 years old. I had nothing to show for my life, my whole life. I was alone. I didn't have nothing coming from nobody, nobody to call. Nobody's putting money on my books. I had the clothes on my back, and that's it. You know, and I remember when I was in that jail, I was sitting there thinking about, and this is my higher power before I knew about my higher power, right? The little nudge about, well, you're 30 years old and you have nothing. That was your way. So let me see what happens my way, you know? And I was like, a year, that's a long time. And it was like, look behind you. You have 30 years of nothing, of pain, of misery, of wreckage, of damage, of misery. really. And, you know, I was like, okay. You know, and that was the first moment, I believe, that I was doing this interaction with a power greater than myself that I didn't even know about, you know, but I remember that. And I remember when I walked into this treatment program, I remember thinking, I don't know what I'm doing. And I was like, I believe there was a God, but I didn't know what anything about it. But I remember thinking in my mind's eye, I saw myself saying, tell me what to do and I'll do it. I mean, that was a moment of surrender right there. In that moment, walking into that treatment place, and it was like I was so desperate for something else. You know, I was in pain from a little girl, and I had that little girl on the inside of me in a woman's body trying to figure this shit out, and I had no idea what I was doing. Looking for love in all the wrong places and getting hurt left and right, disappointed because I had expectations on everything and everybody. If you're in my life, then I expect something from you, right? If you're holding any position in my life, my sponsor would tell me, you can't do that. I'm like, and I fought tooth and nail, kicking and screaming. What are you talking about? That's impossible not to have expectations. She goes, You'll understand one day, you know? And I'm like, no, I won't, you know? I didn't get that. Like, I couldn't grasp that. You know, in the beginning when they said, you know, abstinent, nothing, and I'm like, nothing? They're like, nothing. I'm like, not if nothing. I'm like, that ain't gonna happen. I could not grasp. Because since I was a little girl, I always had something. There was always something. You know, and especially with the men too. It was like, there's something. It was Sancho and Sancho and Sancho and Sancha and one more just in case. You know what I mean? It was always Old Faithful that would come through when I needed to change the way I was feeling. You know, and a lot of this stuff I learned through the process of working the steps. And I love the concept of the steps are like a big mirror. And I remember reading my step work to my sponsor, and I had written everything. They said, write everything. Everything is material, step work material. Don't erase, don't scratch it out, everything, write it all down. If it gets revealed, put it out there. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll put it out there. But I'm over here reading, and she's not going to see what I'm reading or not reading, right? So I'm reading, and I'm like, I'm reading that part, you know? She ain't going to know. And then so I'm reading, and then all of a sudden I got this little burst of courage. I'm like, fuck it, I'm just going to read it all, you know? See what happens. So I read, and I'm looking at her, looking for a reaction, like, or a, ew, or something, you know what I mean? And I didn't see nothing. I saw her smile and nod. Keep going, Gina, keep going. I'm like, okay, you know? So I read it all. And you know, it was through that relationship that I understood unconditional love. Like, there's nothing I could do or say that would cause me or her to love me any less or any more than she did in that moment, you know? And it's amazing to me how doing the step work with a sponsor and learning that intimacy, like that's the most intimate relationship that I have in my life, and I'm so grateful. Like, no, you guys know what I'm talking about. There are no words for the gratitude that I feel, for the love that I feel, not only for my sponsor, but for this fellowship that brought life into me. Because I don't know about you, but when I was out there in my active addiction, I was dead inside. I was like wandering around aimlessly with no destination, dead, pissed off every morning that I had to get up and do it again. I gotta do this again. I'm sick of this. I wanted to die every day because I had nothing. Like, why am I here? I didn't ask to be here, you know? And then when I got clean, after I got clean for a little bit, I started getting really pissed off because I was an addict. I'm like, how come they can drink and smoke and they can have a white picket fence and and a career, and they have a family, and their lives aren't falling apart. They're not in prison. They're not, you know what I mean? Like, why me? How come this happened to me? And our literature says that our disease is not, you know, we're not responsible for our disease, but we are responsible for our recovery, because we got brought the solution to life on life's terms for us. You know, and this isn't for everybody. You know, everybody can come through here all you want. You know, you can go to meetings, socialize, do this, whatever you want to do here. But like I heard the lady sharing before I got up here, if you're not doing step work, then you have no idea what I'm talking about. You have no, and I remember, what are they talking about? If you're sharing something and I don't understand, I'm going to go up to you after the meeting. Excuse me. I really like what you shared, but what are you talking about? Break it down, you know what I mean? No, break it down again. That's too, you know. And I would ask questions all the time, because I really had a desire to know, like, what are we doing here? What are we doing here? You know, and then when I started to get the freedom that's in the steps, you always hear freedom in the steps, the freedom in the steps. People are like, I'm sick about hearing about the 12 steps. I remember hearing a guy talk like that. He used to piss me off. He'd be in the meeting sharing. I'm sick of hearing about steps. I'm like, dude, it's a 12-step program. It's what we do. What are you talking about, you know? Stupid. Sad to say, you know, they found that guy, OD. And when I heard that, you know, I was like, see? Jails, institutions, and death, man. And you know what? Some of us aren't going to get this right away. We're not going to get it right away. And if we're hungry, if we're starving, like, if you're starving and you're homeless and you're starving and you're, somebody says, hey, come here, have a seat. Here, you want something to eat? Hell yeah. I mean, that was me. Hell yeah. Give me something to eat. I'm starving. I was starving for love, man. And I would watch you guys when I was new. I told you guys, when I was new, I was mad. You were laughing? I'm like, stupid. You guys are over there together? I'm like, whatever, you know? You guys are going out to coffee? Whatever. I didn't want to go. But truth be told, you know, like, I want to be laughing. I want to be over there with you guys, huddled up. I want to go to coffee. I want to laugh. I want to smile. I want to look like my sponsor. That's why I chose her. My sponsor is plain Jane, no makeup, blonde flowing hair, like surfer chick. Hippie chick at that time. She's a surfer now. That was her whole life. That was her lifestyle, but I didn't know her. I heard her in a meeting at my home group, the beach meeting in Santa Barbara. I heard her share. She shared something, and then she shared the solution. And then I was like, what? Whoa. Like, I never heard that before. I didn't know. And I told her, hey, would you share? I need to learn that stuff. But that's what they teach us here. In Narcotics Anonymous, if we have a problem, we get taught how to get to the solution. And we're not going to know it by ourselves. We have to learn it. All this stuff, like an addict that's clean is not, we're not in our natural state. Our natural state is to be insane and chaotic and toxic, and we're comfortable like that, in pain and all that. We're comfortable like that. And the goal is to keep practicing these new behaviors. Practicing talking to somebody when you don't want to talk to nobody. Coming up here to read when you're like sweating bullets and you're like, oh shit. And you feel your voice shaking, but everybody's going, you know what I mean? Encouraging you to keep going, keep going, keep going. When I first went into my first H&I is my heart, man. I got introduced in the county jail, but I have to say, when I think of on fire for our recovery, for my recovery, H&I is what set me on fire, because I would go in and do H&I, and I'd come out of there, oh man, you know? And I would tell people, hey, you want to feel some fire? Go do a H&I panel. Oh man, I'm like, see, I told you. It's good, huh? You guys have taught me how to live a new way. You guys taught me how to love. I didn't know love until I got here. And I have to tell you, I celebrated 30 years clean November 1st. And that's proof of fire. Because this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. You know, and if I could give just a little bit to somebody, anybody, you know, what's that saying? Attraction, not promotion. You guys have taught me how to live with self-respect, integrity, kindness, gentleness, all the spiritual principles that I've been taught. That's who I am today. You know, Narcotics Anonymous has given me a heart, and my higher power led me to Narcotics Anonymous so I could find love in the right place. And that's why I keep coming back. So if you're new, if you're old, keep coming back and let us love you to learn to love yourself. Thank you.
Let's give Gina another hand. Thank you. At this time, I'd like to introduce our next speaker, who's also my sponsor, Tony M. from San Jose.
How's everybody doing?
Good.
My name's Tony, I'm an addict. And welcome. You know, I've had a good time since I've been here. I got a lot of support from San Jose, you know. How you guys all? We have a really wonderful fellowship, and we stay close. You know, we support each other. Now I'm pretty much connected to San Fernando Valley's fellowship. We've got my sponsor. We have a really nice sponsor family tree. We've been doing a lot of activities together. We stay in touch. I have some grand sponsees here. I have a couple of sponsees here. My sponsor here and his sponsor's here, you know, so we support each other. I remember when my sponsor has this topic is fire for recovery, and it has a lot to do with sponsorship, right? So I remember when my sponsor, his sponsor had passed, we had the same sponsor. And today Carlos gave that guy some recognition. His name was Robert Morales. And he was just a soulful, really soulful man. He really touched my heart. I got close to him. He was my sponsor, and he passed. So I have a history of good sponsors, you know. My first sponsor moved. I got another sponsor. He died. I got another sponsor for 25 years. And then when he passed, and that sponsor for 25 years, I met him in the penitentiary. We played handball together. And the last thing I would ever thought when I never saw him for years after that he would end up being my sponsor for a quarter of a century. But that's just Narcotics Anonymous, right? So anyway, so that sponsor that passed was being sponsored by the sponsor I have now. And the sponsor I have now, his sponsor became my sponsor. It's like NA incest. It gets better. So when that sponsor passed, I told him we had the same sponsor. You're going to have to be my sponsor now. And he said, well, let me take out some life insurance, right? And then he started hee-hawing about getting another sponsor for himself, right? So me and my sponsor brothers, we'd be texting him all the time, you know. We need a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor. You know, just constant fucking heckling them, right? And And then he decided one day, he goes, I found a sponsor. And then he left us on a ledge for a while. Didn't tell us who it was, like it was secret agent shit, right? And then he said, he announced it like it was a big news flash. It's Carlos from San Fernando. And we all thought, good idea. That's a great call right there, right? Because they have a lot in common. They're both really controlling people. So I said, maybe they can learn from each other, right? Now Carlos is my grand sponsor. And I had the opportunity to meet his sponsor, Chuck. A lot of you know Chuck. And I met Mal, his sponsor. But Chuck left a lasting influence on me when I had a really good conversation with him a few years ago. We sat and we talked, and he told me about his childhood and where he grew up, and he had lived in Haight-Ashbury for a while, you know. And when I was about 12 or 13, I ran away from home in Oakland, California, and I stayed in Ashbury, Haight-Ashbury. They had this place where a lot of just young kids, runaways, were hanging out. And it turned out he was there about the same time period, but he was a young man and I was an adolescent. So that's a lot of just round tripping stuff, right? So we got to know Carlos and a lot of San Fernando fellowship. Some of you are here through Zoom when COVID hit, right? And we needed to put some logs on the fire, as Snoopy says, to rekindle that fire for recovery. And Zoom did it for us, you know. I met a lot of people from down here and other around the world, really. But I really connected with the San Fernando Fellowship. So during COVID, a friend of mine and I, we came down here, we visited a lot of them during COVID. We had dinners and we got to know some. And they were genuine, you know, like Terry, right? Fred, Albert, just great people down here. And so I told my sponsor, Andrew, who is also the secretary tonight, hey, when COVID's over and they open up that video meeting, let's go to it live. He goes, yeah, it's a great idea, sponsor. So we planned this field trip when we came down here. And they treated us really kind, you know, really good. And Carlos was, you know, just really genuine about everything. And we went to the video meeting. It was great meeting, you know. And the next day we were driving home, and Carlos kept calling and saying, hey, you guys okay? You guys make it all right? I was like touched by his concern, right? And we stopped at a couple places, and he calls again. He goes, where are you guys at? We told him, he goes, what's taking you so long, right? We told him, well, we had to stop at this old ranch and see if we could find a horse. He goes, a horse? For what? And then we stopped at this old relic place, see if we could find a badge. He goes, a badge? Yeah. And we stopped at this other place, see if we could maybe get a gun. He goes, a gun? What the fuck for? He goes, because you run that fucking vitamin me like you the sheriff. That's when I found out Carlos could take a joke. He laughed, and like, it was great. You know, we've had a good time talking shit to each other ever since, right? Sheriff, I love you, brother. So, and my sponsor, you know, last time we went to the meeting, and we saw Danny. I think Andrew has a bromance going with that dude. Every time we see him, it's a selfie, right? And we don't have any Hollywood actors up here in San Jose. But sometimes my sponsor thinks he's Clint Eastwood. You know what I mean? I'll call him, what's up, bro? Go ahead, make my day, you know? I'll run down something that I'm thinking about doing. He goes, you feel lucky? Huh? You feel lucky? It makes me think about it. It makes me pray first, right? So we got a great, great family tree going. And then I got in San Jose, you know, can't have a fire without our homegirls, right? Our homegirls in San Jose and are just really great, right? They talk long shit to me, and then they give me a hug. Love you, Tony. Love you, Tony. And which I need that, you know, because we learn from everybody, man. You know, I really admire some of the women that I got clean with and kind of grew up with because they go through stuff that I don't know if I could handle. And, you know, when I came to NA, I came in from NA right straight from prison. I had been around the fellowship before through a drug program. I went there twice. They took us to meetings. And I had actually, back then in the 70s, I met some of the people from San Fernando. Matt, got real close to Matt, and the Bynes brothers, and just a lot of different people that came up there. And so I knew this area was genuine. And but also met a lot of homegirls that stayed clean. You know, some were in this room today. And you know, I watch them go through stuff, and they handle it, right? And they're real. When I talk to them, you know, I get moved. And you know, what's good? Like I said, I came from the pen, and I remember my mom picked me up. And I, by the way, thank you, Gina. Where are you at? I did really thank Gina for her share. Okay, right on. Thank you. And I'm glad your daughter's here. That's really heartwarming. Yeah. So anyway, I got home. My mom had picked me up. She had got custody of my two daughters. And my daughter's in the car. And, you know, I knew I was going to change my life when I was in the pen. I was in one of those new prisons that, you know, they're locked down. You're stuck in a cell all the time. And Freddie Mata. You guys remember Freddie Mata? I can say his name, he passed, yeah. Well, I had gotten close to him when I was in that rehab. And he sent me first the Triangle of Self-Obsession. You guys familiar with that one? That's like a heartbeat one for me. And then he had a couple other things he sent me. And I read it. And I wrote him back and I said, it was a new pen. There was no H&I yet. And I told him I want to start a meeting here. And there was a couple of guys on that yard I saw with, you know, the blue book, right? This was by 89 when I paroled. And he sent me a box of NA books, the blue book. And I remember, I don't know if any of you ever done time, but you get a package like that, your homeboys think it's a couple of soups, you know, Snickers, coffee. And so when I got the package, you know, we all share, right? We all share with each other. And they follow me to where you pick up the packages. And I go, it's not a package like that, you guys, right? And they go, yeah, right, you know. They want their issue, right? So I'm carrying the box, and they're bugging me all the way. Open the box, right? And I started getting really irritated, you know what I mean? I wasn't known for really being calm back then, so I stop at the weigh pile. I go, fine, this is what it is. And they go, books? I go, what the fuck is this, right? You know, one of them opens the book. Narcotics Anonymous, what the fuck is wrong with you, Matt? And you know what? I wanted to sock him in the face so bad. That's how much recovery I had at that moment, you know. But a couple of them actually asked me questions about it, you know, and then the same old thing, if it's so great, why are you in here, right? And I said, because I tried to defend it, and then I got mad all over again, right? Like, really wanted to just, like, let's get down with this shit, right? I'm not even going to try to explain nothing, right? I went into my, we had a lockdown after that, but I started the meeting, and that meeting is still going today, I think the Stockton H&I is doing it now, so I get moved thinking about it. Whew. You know, because probably 90% of the people in there were for drugs, you know, so anyway. So I paroled, right? But before I paroled, I remember sitting in a cell. And Freddie had said, read this one pamphlet, then write an inventory, you know. And I was locked down, you know. There's no freedom, really. I was getting up for two showers a week or yard, this little yard. And half the time, you just go on the yard fight. So anyway, I read that shit, and oh shit, huh? It was our NA literature, right? Excuse me, right? So, Yeah. Good shit. Good shit. So I read it, and I start crying, right? Like I'm doing now, but way worse, right? And I'm crying so loud that I can barely hear this voice. And it's a cell next to me. And it's a homeboy saying, "Tony!" And we had to speak through the toilets because that's the only way you can hear anybody, right? You're going, you know, talking down to a toilet. That's in the bottom, real tall. So I go, put myself together, right? Get my manly voice back. I go, "What's up, bro?" He goes, "Hey, man, some weak motherfucker is crying." I was so scared he was gonna think it was me, right? And I go, "Yeah, man." I didn't know what I'll say, you know. And the next day, when we got our fucking food and all, and the doors open, forgot what they were gonna do, and I go on the tier, and he comes down, and he goes, "Who the fuck was crying last night?" I go, "I have no idea, man." But I realized that I had issues, you know. I think that's when I really surrendered, understanding that, you know, I got a fucking problem, you know? And so I wrote back Freddie, and he contacted Poyle. His name was Robert, some of you know him. And so when I got home that day, from my mom, you know, my two daughters in the back, they're scared shitless. They don't know who this dude is, right? Just got out of prison. And Boyle was sitting on the porch and, you know, just sitting there. And my mom pulls up and I go, "What's he doing here?" She goes, "I called him, you know," and she goes, "Freddie called him." And so he goes, you know, some of you remember Robert? He was always like, "How you doing? You know, how you doing?" And I go, "Fine." I didn't really know how to act. I didn't even know how to act on the way home. My mom stopped like some A&W and some car got too close, you know, to get out and fucking attack, or do I just, you know, put my hands in my, I didn't know how to act, you know. My mom looked at me, "You all right?" And I go, "He parked really close to you." She goes, "No, he didn't," you know. And so I told Robert, I go, "Look, bro, thanks for being here, but I want to visit my daughters and, you know, and relax." And he said, "No, your mom wants you to go to a meeting." So we're in this car. I was in Fremont, California. And he drove me out to San Jose, and I stayed there all day that night. We ate and went to a meeting. I think it was a Candlelight downtown. And I just started my journey, you know what I mean? I never looked back, except in inventories, right? And, you know, and now it's come, you know, to this, right, where I'm at today. You know, Narcotics Anonymous has helped me through every phase of my life since 1989. In fact, before that, because I heard stuff that made me think about it. And I met people who sent me stuff to read, you know. And so anyway, I remember how Narcotics Anonymous sponsorship got me through a lot of stuff. Like, you know, I had two little girls. One was 7 and one was 9 when I got clean, right? I didn't know what to do with them. They'd look at me and, "What?" You know? My mom, you know, she had kicked my dad out. My stepdad, he was a drunk, you know, and I used to blame him for a lot of shit, but he had quit drinking while I was in prison, you know. Let me see how much time I got. He had quit drinking, and so he became a good grandfather to my daughters. He was a terrible stepdad to me and my brothers and my sister, and he was a mean husband to my mom, you know. He was really violent. But he quit drinking, right? And my mom goes, "He comes over and see the girls, but I won't let him in the house. He can come over and visit." And he pulled up one day, and he visited my daughters, and I just watched from a distance, and all these emotions came up, right? Some of it anger, some of it shame, because I wasn't there, and he had to be there. And, you know, This is one of the similarities I had with Steve later on. You know, I prayed about it because that's what was suggested. And somebody had the wisdom to say, why don't you look at him the way your daughters look at him, who he is now. That's some deep shit. So I did that, right? He pulls up again, and we made eye contact. And I said, I need to say something to you. He don't know that I'm in recovery now. He don't know nothing, right? He sees this dude that's been fucking playing sports and working out and a maniac in the fucking pen, right? You know, so, and a maniac on the streets. I mean, my life was so insane that when I was in Salt Lake Central, they raided my mom's house because they thought I got out and pulled a bunch of robberies because somebody identified me as the guy that did it. And they raided my mom's house without checking that I was locked up in Salt Lake Central. You know, so that's how insane I was on the streets. So my stepdad was kind of leery, right? And I approached the car, and you could tell in his eyes he didn't know what to expect. And I just told him, look, you know, thank you for being there for my daughters. You know, I really appreciate it. And I wasn't there. I just owned my part. And then after an inventory, I apologized for the way I behaved as a teenager, you know. Because I remember one day, I don't know, maybe I was 16. Ooh. Not only did I stop him from hitting my mom, I fucked him up. And so I had to apologize for my part without thinking about his part. But I did it, you know. And it was then that I realized my daughters were looking at me different now. You know, they just were. It was so bad that when I got home, you know, I remember I used to call from prison and talk to my daughters, and they'd have slumber parties. They used to play that stupid song all the time when they had slumber parties. Girls just want to have fun. And I used to listen in the background. I was so happy for them that they were having a better childhood than I had. So, but when I got home, it was total silence. You know, and I asked the oldest daughter, Becca, she don't talk much, you know. I go, how come you don't have your friends over? She goes, eh, ran out of time, right? And so I asked my youngest daughter, how come their friends come over? And she goes, Becca told them all that you were dead. Fuck. Boy, got a lot of shame. But you know what? I knew that a lot of just had to clean that shit up, you know. And I did. I did. You know, got him into sports. I remember going to court for custody because my mom said, you got to take care of him. I can't do it anymore. So I went to court. I got a job, you know, and I remember going for the judge. And he says, look, you got to get insurance for them, health insurance, and they have to have their own room, right? And I said, sure, no problem. But I walked out of there scared shitless. You know what I mean? Fuck. I had no career. I was going to have to work two jobs. I started going all this fucking future tripping. And I went to a meeting in San Jose, and it was, I'm sitting there, you know, looking at that faraway look on my face, and Joe Melita goes, hey, so you remember Joe Melita, right? And he goes, hey, how you doing? I go, I'm fine. And he said something that Steve used to always say. He said, tell that to your face. Right, and I got angry. Right, so fuck you talking about. I mean, he goes, come on. He took me outside. That's the way Joe was. He took me outside, and he said, look, what's going on? I told him, went to court, man. I got to fucking get him their own room. You know, health insurance. I got to get this. You know, I got to do this. I got to do that. I got to do this. You know, I'm probably moving my head around. So anyway, Joe says something that I never forgot. He said, all of that's doable one day at a time. And that's how I've tried to live my life ever since. I remember praying one day, and I was looking at the horizon, and I was praying, you know, God, help me. Do one day at a time. Help me. I don't understand it, you know, how to quiet this mind. And and I was looking out at the horizon, right? And it dawned on me. You know, the sun comes up, the sun goes down, the moon comes out, the tide goes out, tide goes down, tide comes in, all in a 24-hour period, one day at a time. And I realized whatever created our world and us, programmed it for us, it's this mind that wouldn't let me live in it, right? So now I practice this thing. When I start my meditations, I go to a meditation walk every day, every morning. And I start my walk by saying, mind, never mind. And I clear it. My neighbors think I'm 5150, but that's okay. So anyway, I want to thank you all for being here. Enjoy yourselves. Take care of yourselves. And look out for each other.